Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's program, and I say afternoon kind of in a joking way. We've got an interesting show today. I'm actually recording the show at 8 o'clock this morning on Wednesday, and we're going to tape the show. We've got the University of Texas head men's coach, Michael Sinner, and he's going to call in here in just a second. He has a match today. He is playing Baylor University today, and he is graciously decided to come on the show. We were supposed to do it at 9 o'clock, and here we are. I scrambled around. I've got to do some work myself at 9 o'clock, and he accepted a proposal to come on at 8 o'clock this morning, and so we're scrambling around, both of you having a busy day, and I'm not going to do my normal ranting and raving. I'm not going to go through the rankings and get to the news. I'm going to jump right into this interview here. I'm so excited to have him on. We've got a lot to talk about concerning the Longhorns and what's going on down in Austin, Texas. They've been having just a tremendous year down there and have been just blowing up the tennis world. And what I love about it being here in Texas is that they're representing the state tremendously. And for years we have been in Texas, and I'll say this, we've been crying out to get a team, a group of teams in the middle of this nation that can represent the tennis and show it off. And we're currently doing that in the Big 12. We've got a great group of Big 12 participants out there and on the men's side that are doing their job. And within the top 10, we've got University of Oklahoma, we've got Baylor University, and the University of Texas. And then sitting right outside, and they're not in the Big 12, but they used to be, they're in the SEC, Texas A&M University. So this is a great representation of what Texas and Oklahoma, what we can do in the tennis world. So I'm going to bring Coach Sinner into this interview, and we're going to talk some Longhorn tennis today. So, Coach Sinner, are you there? Hello, Coach Sinner. Oh, I think we got a little technical difficulty. He's got to be there. I've got a 512-748-8467. Coach Sinner, can you hear me? Hold on just a second. Let me see if we can try this again. Coach Sinner, can you hear me now? All right, Coach Sinner, I'm going to ask that you call back in. I'm going to hang up on you. Call back in. Let's see if we can reconnect here. The Longhorns, they've got a match today in the Big 12, and they're playing Baylor University, and they're on the move here. They're at Baylor, And I know he's traveled up the road there to Waco, and they've got Texas Tech after that in Lubbock, April 19th. Then they got the Big 12, the quarterfinals on the 25th. The 26th, they play the semifinals, and then 27th, the men's finals of the Big 12. And what I love about Coach Center is he's got all that on his website. This guy's anticipating getting there. So I know that he'll call right back in. There he is. So let's see here. Coach Center, are you there? I got a weird thing happening here. So let's see. Man, oh, man. I tell you what, Coach Center, let's see here. Do me a favor, Coach. Why don't you call 713-876-1751. I'm going to put you on my phone, and we're going to do this interview through my phone, and we're just going to talk through this. And I don't know what's going on with the computer here, but let's see if we can do that. I don't understand it, but we'll get this going. Okay, Coach? 713-876-1751, Coach, and I hate to do that, but I'll give my phone number over the air. Call me on that number, 713-876-1751. I'll probably get lots of calls. Thanks, Coach. It's a weird deal. I apologize. We've had this before. We got technical difficulties, and you know, it's just the way it goes. And we're going to see if we can work this out over the Internet. I apologize. You know, we're going to work on this. So I just can't understand it, but it's the way it goes. So hopefully he's calling in. You know, what I may do, there he is. Let's see here. Okay. Center, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, Coach. So we're going to try this, and I hope this is working. So what I've done here is I've merged the two calls, and hopefully we've got this on a conference call, so we're gonna try to work this thing out here. I appreciate you coming in today. I don't know what's going on with the software there at Blog Talk, but we're going to work this thing out. So welcome to the program. This is your second time that we've had you on the show. You've got an exciting thing going on down there at UT there in Austin, but we had to do this early today. And tell us what's going on today with the Longhorns.
Well, we've got a big match tonight. We're heading over to Baylor a little bit later, and we play the Baylor Bears tonight at 6 o'clock. So the conference championship will be on the line. So anybody in the Waco area, I encourage you to come out tonight and watch the match. It should be a very, very exciting match.
Well, I know that you've drawn an interest of my mentor, John Peterson. He is traveling down from Tyler, Texas to watch this match. So I imagine that the eyes of Texas will be upon you tonight. And this isn't just a small-time match, Coach. I mean, this is a big deal for ITA, NCAA tennis. This is number 6 and number 7 in the ITA. I mean, this is going to be an exciting deal.
Yeah, this is a big match tonight. There are a lot of ramifications, conference-wise, NCAA-wise, you know, pride-wise. So there's a lot on the line tonight. You know, I think both teams know it. Both teams will be excited, and I anticipate a very good match. You know, they're very good. They're physical. They're a big, big, strong team, and I feel like we've played hard. We've played well this year, and so I anticipate you know, like I said, a really exciting night tonight.
Now, Coach, I have to ask you, you decided, you and Coach Canole, you decided to put this match on at 6 p.m. in the evening. This to draw more fans?
Well, typically we play Baylor and Texas. We've played traditionally in the middle of the week. We've played a few times on the weekend, but we're so close we can just drive over in the same day. And, you know, we'll typically play it at night for the fans, people to come out and watch. So, you know, usually when we show up over there, there's a pretty good crowd. So I expect to see a few people out there tonight.
Now, do you think you're going to have a strong following of Longhorns take up the road trip?
Well, I've had, you know, Coach Snyder, who I followed, he called me yesterday, and he's bringing a group of his guys over. And I've gotten several emails from people from the Fort Worth and Dallas area that are going to show up. And Yeah, I think we'll have a nice little group over there. I think we'll be outnumbered, but any Longhorn fan who's listening right now, I encourage you to put on your burnt orange and drive over to Waco tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very good college match. You know what? This is the thing that I miss most about college tennis, not being in it. This is a situation where you take my team versus your team, you throw three doubles matches and six singles matches out there, and you know, 3.5, 4 hours later, you come out of there and you hope that you got a 4-3 match. It comes down to a last set tiebreaker, and there's a hero on the day, right, Coach?
Well, yeah, we've seen a lot of those. You know, with the format, the doubles is pretty fast. Anything can happen. It just takes very small momentum shifts to secure that point. So that's really up in the air. And then you get into these 2 out of 3 set singles matches, and usually when teams are pretty evenly matched, it's hard to come back and win 4. But you see it happen sometimes, and it just turns into a struggle, a lot of drama. And it's an exciting sport to watch because you're really close to the players and you're up close and personal.
Yeah, and being on the court, you get a great view versus sitting in the stands and the enthusiasm of those fans. You get to feel it, but living on the court with those players is an entirely different experience, Coach.
Well, they're young, they're emotional. You know, it's an emotional sport. You know, like any sport, really, and they're fighting hard, and you know, but they're going to make mistakes. Both teams will make mistakes. There'll be some ebbs and flows, and it's really the team that can kind of just withstand and be resilient and not get too high or too low, but just kind of sustain the level over the course of the match that typically comes out on top.
Now, Coach, your team sits with a record of 19-3, an amazing 11-0 experience. Now, we're going to talk about that home experience this year. It was extra special for you guys, and we're going to get to that. But those three losses this year, growing experiences for your team?
For sure. I mean, all three losses, we were right in the middle of the match. You know, we lost to Ohio State after defeating Georgia at the National Indoors. And we lost 4-2, but we had a chance to win the last two matches. We were up breaks in the third and didn't quite get it done. And then against Illinois, we were up 3-2 and up 4-1 in a decisive tiebreaker and on serve in the third and came up a little short. And then against North Carolina, we lost 4-3. So, you know, you play enough of these matches. We've won some this year where it came down to the end, and we've lost a couple, and you kind of go through those emotions, and I think it just better prepares you for the end of the year. That's why we play such a challenging schedule, so that the end we're best prepared, and whatever comes our way, hopefully we'll be ready for it.
Well, Coach, it seems like you're building momentum at the right time in your season as you travel towards that Big 12 Conference Championship.
Well, you want to peak at this time, and we've talked a lot about that this year. The way we started training, really all in the end of last year, I thought we started to play better, and we had a pretty good summer, and we've really done the little things, I think, better this year. The way we've warmed up, the way we've started our practices, it's really all been geared towards playing well at the end of the year. That was our whole point of emphasis. We want to play our best tennis. In the Big 12, we want to give ourselves a chance to win a conference championship, and we want to move forward. If you can win a conference championship this year in the Big 12, you're capable of winning a national championship.
Right, and you're almost done with that Big 12 season. You finish up the 19th with Texas Tech. You're traveling out to Lubbock, and then you're on to that conference tournament.
Sure. No, we're coming down the final stretch here. You know, it's important that we just kind of stay with what we're doing. We're trying to stay injury free. It's a long season. Guys play a lot of tennis, so it's really important that we just take good care of our bodies and stay on thing a coach would say. But it really is important. These kids, you know, academically they start getting challenged even more here at the end. They start to feel a little pressure. You know, tennis wise, their bodies have taken a certain amount of hits over the course of the spring, and so. It's really important that you do the little things every day or it will catch up to you.
And, Coach, we go back about 10 years ago, and we look at the ITA rankings. They're dominated by what is now the Pac-12, moving on to the Pac, let's just say Pac-16, and we know that's kind of where they're headed. The SEC teams were in there as well. We had maybe one Big 12 team in there, and Baylor in the top 10, and Texas was trying to creep in there from the outside. Now we look at it, we've got three solid Big 12 teams stuck in the middle of that top team. What's been the difference here?
Well, you know, I think college tennis has evolved over, you know, from I played in the 80s, and, you know, it was Stanford and UCLA, USC and Georgia. No team outside of that group won a national championship and for years and years and years. And then we got into the 2000s. Some things changed. I think international players came more into play. Some guys started turning pro. You know, Paul Goldsteins were not just showing up at Stanford every year. They were maybe turning pro, or some of them started to go to other schools. And you start to see an Illinois pop up and win one year, and Baylor popped up, and, you know, we were in the finals in 08, and it just started. You started to see some other schools outside of that core group of four start to emerge, and now it's really a wide open game. I mean, you see these young coaches. I'm not the young coach anymore, but you see these young guys. I mean, they're just flying everywhere, going everywhere. Trying to find players, working really hard at developing those players, working hard at recruiting the players, and it's just a different ball game.
Coach, you've done a great job of mixing your players all over the U.S. You've got some international players, and what I love about what you've done with your roster is you invaded the junior college ranks. You went out there and got a great player from the NJCAA program and putting them into your system. I mean, I love this. So how did this come about?
Well, we really hadn't had a lot of junior college players come through Texas. Had a few through the years, but I kept getting word from people that I knew that this kid Adrian Berkowitz was a really good player and a great kid, and so. I went over, I watched him play. We started recruiting him, and you know, Coach Peterson just couldn't say enough good things about him. His roommate was a kid named George Rivers, who used to come to our camp year after year. The dad called me, George Sr. called me and told me what a great kid he was, and they were right. I mean, he's just been incredible. Hard worker. Great team player, has improved so much. You know, he just dominated the junior college world last year, led Tyler to the national championship, and really was clearly the best player in the country. You know, if you come to this level, and you're not going to just dominate. Came in, and he was playing, and he was doing okay, not great, kind of adjusting to what was going on, but I could just tell he had the right mindset. You know, he showed up every day with the right work ethic and the right mindset. He wins our fall tournament, actually beats Mate Katura, who's going to go to Mississippi State, who's at Tyler, and looks at me and says, I was embarrassed. I need to show you that I could do better. I said, wow, what an attitude. Then we came to find out he had mono in the fall. We didn't even know it. And he was doing all this while having mono. And I just looked at my assistants. I said, this kid is going to be special. And he got healthy, and he really has. He's been a special player for us.
Well, Coach, I got to ask, with these Texas kids, are they giving these internationals that attitude to be a Texan?
Well, you know, once you're in Texas, you know, you become a Texan. These kids, they love Austin. They love the university. They fit in. They've been just wonderful additions. You know, my recruiting philosophy is I always recruit the state of Texas first. You know, we added John Mee from Dallas. He'll be coming in next year. We look around the country, and then we've added some international guys. But it's such a, you know, diverse population here in Austin and the university. They've just fit in really well. You know, I just got a call right before I got on with you from a guy that played for me, 15 years ago from Poland. wishing me a happy birthday. I mean, these kids are just, they become, you know, such a big part of our program, and they're just great kids.
And, Coach, you mentioned, you know, today is National Signing Day. I mean, am I correct about that?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And I was having a conversation with Chuck Creasy, and he's the head coach out at Citadel yesterday. And to me, this is one of those great American days for college athletics. I mean, this is where you guys in the coaching world, you're giving out millions of dollars to some wonderful students athletes out there in all divisions. And as I told Coach, I said, Coach, you got to remember, in 30 to 40 years, these people that you give these scholarships to are going to be running the country. I mean, what a tremendous responsibility you guys have.
Well, I give you a neat little story. You know, when I took the job here at Texas, the first day I went into my office and I sat down and a gentleman walked in and introduced himself to me. His name was Jack Blanton. And I had tried to do some research about UT and the players, but I didn't really know Jack Blanton. And I walked out of my office and I said, this guy came in and introduced you. He's a nice man, but who is Jack Blanton? And Jack Blanton was a former Board of Regents, chairman of the Board of Regents, has a foundation. There's one of the leading art museums in the nation is named after him, and it's on campus. And I got to know Jack. He passed away in the last year, but he was just such a great man. And I asked him, I said, what made you love the University of Texas? I just loved it, and I loved playing for Dr. Penick back in the 40s. And it changed my life. So here's a man that went on to be incredibly successful, was great friends with President Bush, the senior, was very philanthropic, gave so much to the University of Texas financially and his time. And a lot of it had to do with his experience as a tennis player at Texas. So, you know, that's what college tennis is all about.
And, Coach, now, you know, I mean, in this situation, you're giving out 4.5 scholarships over a four-year period, and I can't think of better coaches in the United States of America than men's Division I tennis coaches. I mean, you guys literally squeeze blood from a turnip here, you know, and get the most out of what you can give and motivate these kids to do so much in such a short period of time. I mean, it's truly amazing what you guys do to get them to be a top 10 Division I program.
It's, you know, when I started here at Texas, a full scholarship in-state was valued at about $8,000. Now it's over $20,000. And the out-of-state was valued at $16,000, and now you're into the mid-40s to upper 40s. And the formula, the model is really broken. I don't know if you saw yesterday, the NCAA announced that we're going to be able to feed our student athletes now as much as we want. Because, you know, 20% of a $10,000 scholarship is obviously $2,000. Now you're looking 20% of a $20,000 is $4,000. So, you know, the cost to the kids just kept going up and up exponentially, far faster than the rate of inflation. And so it's become more and more challenging to handle that 4.5 scholarships. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the NCAA does with the models, particularly for equivalency sports like us. You know, there's a head count sport like football where if you get a scholarship, it's a full. With us, we don't really give full scholarships. And we're the ones really scrambling to try to figure out how to meet everybody's needs.
Well, Coach, I definitely think that, you know, in all this, I think you should be able to feed your athletes. You know, I mean, I think that's just the basic thing that you should be able to do, and I'm glad that the NCAA recognized that, you know, and I think it stemmed from the comment that the University of Connecticut athlete made there at the NCAA Final Four, you know, about going hungry and sure. Then, you know, selling some uniforms, stuff like that. And I realize in talking to a lot of the NCAA coaches that you guys aren't really allowed to expand on some of that, but I understand. You know, these are trying times for college athletics.
Very trying times. very trying times. Unfortunately, I think you're probably going to see some more tennis programs dropped at the end of this year. The model is broken. It's become a huge business, and in my opinion, an unsustainable business. I read in the paper today that Arkansas State bid out for $11,000 and gave a guy an opportunity to coach at the spring game. And maybe that's fun, maybe that's neat, but all it is anybody and everybody trying to find new revenue streams to support what's going on. And at the end of the day, in my opinion, we've lost our way a little bit from the foundation of what, you know, intercollegiate athletics is all about. But, you know, once you let the toothpaste out of the tube, it's hard to put it back in. And television just took over college football and college basketball. And I'm just afraid in the next 20 years what could happen to a sport like men's tennis.
Well, I think one of the smartest moves the NCAA could ever make would be to start putting former tennis coaches in charge of their athletic programs, men's tennis coaches. You know, because I think you'd start to see an understanding of what college athletics is supposed to be. And I think that you guys get the boat. I think everybody else misses the boat.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know if that's going to start to happen. I think, I don't think my name is on the waiting list to become the AD at Texas, but it's becoming an ever-changing world. There's no doubt.
Yeah, Coach. Now, before we move on too much further here, I mean, you've surrounded yourself with an excellent coaching staff. Down there, you've got Ricardo Rubio as your assistant coach. How did you land this guy?
Well, Ricardo and I are like an old married couple now. We've been together. This is his 12th year with me. And when I was the coach at TCU a few moons ago, Ricardo was a great player at TCU, was trying to come back and after getting off the tour and go to business school there. And I was when Coach Bartson retired, I became the director of the facility, and we hired Ricardo back at TCU. To work at the tennis center. So we got to know each other, and he told me he was interested in being a college coach, and he actually got hired as the assistant at TCU by Joey Rave, a good friend of mine. And then when David Roditi, the current coach at TCU, left Texas, I called Ricardo, and he's been with me since 2002. So he's fantastic. He's a great player. The guys love him. He's a steady guy as you'll ever meet. So, I'm really lucky. And we have a volunteer this year, Alex Rafiz, in his second year that played at North Carolina, has been just incredible, just helped out so much. So, yeah, I'm a pretty lucky guy.
Yeah. And, Coach, we're going to go back to that schedule. You were 11-0 at home. Now, this was an important season for you to do that, being 11-0, and you want to tell my fans on the show why it was important to go 11-0 at home this year?
Well, this is the last year of Penick Allison. And, Penick Allison was on the south end of the stadium, and in 1985-86, they built this facility here just south of the stadium across MLK. And it was really one of the great tennis facilities in the nation at the time. And it's been here since 86. And the Dell Medical School that was voted in, I think, in the fall of 2012, this is basically going to become the heart of the medical school plaza. So they're going to tear it down on June the 1st. And, it was pretty sad. I felt like, if we continue to do what we were doing, we would get to host the first two rounds of the NCAA championships here. So we'll probably get a couple more opportunities to play in here. But, yeah, this is a sad time to see this building go down, and we're going to have to move but make way for this medical school, which should be up and running in the next couple of years. This whole area, I think, Red River area, if you're familiar with Austin, will be a little city in itself just south of the campus.
Coach, what an unfortunate year not to be hosting the NCAA championships going 11-0 at home.
Well, we will. We will still be able to host the first two rounds.
Well, I mean the whole thing, Coach.
The whole thing, yeah. I mean, yeah, that would be incredible to be able to host that championship event. And, you know, we're really designing our next facility with that specifically in mind. We want to be a host for the NCAA tournament, but that would have been pretty neat to have been the host this year.
You know, this facility not only services UT, but, I mean, the whole state of Texas. I mean, this is where many a state champion in the UIL high school division has been crowned coach, and many
sure.
other events in college and other events. I can remember early on, it used to host the ITA All-American Championships
yeah.
there as well.
No doubt. No, this has been the home of many great events. I mean, we've had these high school kids come through here. I know it's probably exhilarating for them to walk out there and play, and I've seen some great matches here through the years, and so many fans and families and college events, and we have, you know, recreational events. This has been it's been a world-class facility that's been utilized by a lot of people over the last 30 years.
Well, Coach, I had a good friend of mine who wanted me to ask, you think it's going to affect the Longhorn tennis program not to have a spectacular facility over the next year in your recruiting process? I mean, aren't you guys kind of being forced here to move to your intramural courts?
We are. Our recruiting has actually gone well. You know, we have some designs. You know, what I'm selling is, hey, we do have 1 year that we will be in a temporary facility. But assured you're going to play in what I feel will be one of, if not the best, college tennis facilities in the country in the next couple of years. So, you know, we need 1 year off to build it, but, you know, we're anticipating this to be a spectacular building and one that will, you know, be there for another 30 or 40, 50 years. And we're going to plan on bidding and hopefully host the NCAA championships in the next, you know, 4 to 5 years.
Now, I have no doubt about that. Now, the person that wanted me to ask that question, he couldn't keep a straight face when he asked that question, Coach. He knows full well that you're not going to have any problem recruiting those kids there to UT. And I reminded him quickly that you guys just built a brand-new indoor facility out there in Austin that's kind of state-of-the-art as well, correct?
That's correct. We opened it up last March. Beautiful six-court indoor facility. It's in right in the heart of our golf course, so we've got a UT golf and UT tennis right there. We've played several home matches out there. We played Arkansas this year. We've played Michigan in there. We played SMU. We'll play a little bit more in there next year, you know, while we build our new facility. But it's a beautiful building if you've never seen it, and fun to watch a college tennis match.
Yeah. Now, coaches, I've got to ask, you're one of the programs out there, and this was just a blessing to the University of Texas, but you guys have the Longhorn Network, and this is a broadcast network that was set up by your university to highlight the University of Texas sports programs. Now, in the spring, how does that benefit your tennis programs there?
Well, we're pretty lucky. You know, this is a contract that was signed that created the Longhorn Network in conjunction. It's run by ESPN. And so when we do these matches, I don't know how many people have seen them. We're starting to get picked up by more and more cable companies, so I think more and more people are able to watch. But it's first rate. It's no different than watching the Australian Open on ESPN. I mean, there'll be 20 or 25 people running around here, and cameras and wires everywhere, and I've got a mic on. They can hear me during the match. We fly people in, along with John Wiegand, who used to play here. They'll do the play-by-play and the color, and, you know, it's really an amazing experience. Last night, two of our guys went into studio and were interviewed, Soren and David Hollander, and so it's really neat for the kids. I mean, they get an opportunity to meet with the media, be on television, be interviewed. People all across the country now can watch us play. I get calls from people saying, "Hey, is this match going to be on the Longhorn Network?" I enjoyed watching you guys play. So it's for a tennis player, it's quite a deal.
Yeah, and I can only imagine that it's going to continue to grow. I mean, in the spring, it's an excellent time to showcase the spring sports that are played there on the campus, and tennis, men's and women's, both being spring sports.
Well, I think we have a 20-year contract with them, so I'm assuming this is going to continue to go. So it's a big part of our athletic department. We're very lucky. We're the only school that has their own network like this. It's to showcase all the sports and all the athletes, and a lot of different teams, and it's also a great revenue stream for the university, not only the athletic department, but I believe some of the money is going on campus to the universities as well. So it's been a win-win for everyone.
Yes, sir. Now, I've got to ask this in my experience here in listening to people through the show and observing here, one of the drawbacks to this was, in college tennis, we've got six singles matches going on at the same time, three doubles matches. You guys there on the Longhorn Network, how have you worked through this?
It's amazing. They'll flip back and forth. They'll post the scores of what's going on the other courts. They see something happening, they'll flip over to that court. Like I said, when you watch it, the picture and the view is no different than what you would see at the Australian or any coverage that ESPN has. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty spectacular coverage for a college tennis match.
I mean, I guess you guys were sort of the pioneer in hosting a college tennis match on TV. The Pac-12, they've created their own network. We know the SEC is creating their networks as they move through this. You got to have some kind of influence. And ESPN3, we knew that they covered it with the college match day programs. I mean, they've got to be learning from the Longhorn Network here, right, Coach?
Well, when they talked about doing these college match days, I tried to explain to them, without having all the details, how much it took to broadcast these events. So I think they are learning. I think that USTA learned a lot. They streamed some of these matches this year. The Pac-10 network, I think, will maybe pick a match or two during the course of the year. And I think it's not easy to broadcast six matches. It takes a lot of cameras. It takes a lot of manpower to do that. So, I think that we're all learning, but what they've done here at the Longhorn Network is we're still out in the lead. I mean, we played the national championship match in 2008 live on ESPN, and since then, just in the last 5 or 6 years, they've come a long ways in what they're doing.
Coach, now the beginning of the spring season, we underwent some strange behavior in the ITA, the NCAA, the USTA format, scoring differences here. I mean, can you help my listeners explain what the Longhorns went through, what you liked, what you didn't like?
Well, there's been a push, and if you had Coach Creasy on yesterday, I can only imagine what he said. I didn't hear the interview, but I probably don't need to hear the interview to know what he said. I know he doesn't like it, but essentially these matches sometimes can go a long time, four and a half. I've seen them go up to five. The women's matches, they played Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. I think each match was close to 5 hours long. So there was a move that we should shorten the format, that we need to make some of these matches quicker, that the fans would enjoy it more, we'd make it more exciting. So they tried to implement some no-ad scoring and shorten the doubles sets and the singles sets. So when we were getting to 5-all, we were playing tiebreakers as opposed to 6-all for the singles and the doubles. So you can imagine how fast, with no-ad, tiebreaker, 5-all, the doubles was going. I mean, we won some matches in 16, 17 minutes, and we lost a couple in about 16 or 17 minutes. I mean, the momentum would happen, and boom, it was over. And these 3-all points, these no-ad points would happen, and momentum shifts would just, you could just feel it. All of a sudden, it just flip-flopped the other way. So the matches were staying under 3 hours. I did not like the doubles being played to 6, no ad, but it was too fast, tiebreaker at 5-all. probably in the other camp from Coach Creasy. I did enjoy the no-ad tennis, though, because I thought it was exciting. I really thought it was exciting. Sometimes it worked for us, sometimes it worked against us, but it was like you knew when you walked out there how important every point was, because when it got to 3-all, anything could happen. And so we played through the national indoors that way, and, I know that Coach Creasy probably feels like it hurts the ability for fitness. The warrior type guy that wants to stay out there as long as it takes. But I think that it's probably going to come down to the pipeline that we're going to see some more no-ad tennis going forward.
Coach, are we concerned more about the fans than we are the players?
Well, the players, I mean, that's a good question. Players, I think, can adjust to whatever. I think you're going to see that probably happen at the futures level. I wouldn't be surprised to see in the next 10 years that Grand Slam tennis not play 3 out of 5 sets. I think if you go to watch the U.S. Open, there are very few people that are going to watch the entire 3 out of 5 set match. If you go and sit in there, people are kind of coming and going all the time. Couple breaks, serve, and in the odd games, people are getting up and moving. So I think it's as much as looking at what's in the best interest of the sport and how can we grow and build the sport and make it more exciting. And the players adjust. I played no-ad tennis in college. I thought it helped my development because I felt like it made me really concentrate on each and every point. I don't think it's one or the other. I think the question I ask myself is, what's in the best interest of tennis and growing the game of tennis? And, everybody's going to have a different opinion, and we'll see what happens. I'm willing to do either. I just found the no-ad tennis to be pretty exciting.
Well, Coach, as we currently look at the system, we've got one American that sits in the top 10, and we're entering the dirt season, so we know that that's probably not going to last much longer. And
yeah.
He's a product of the NCAA system. We know that we're entering the time with the NFL draft, and the NBA draft will follow that. It looks like that college tennis appears to be the only sport out there that doesn't prepare its players for the professional ranks on a year-in and year-out basis. And we're not doing our job as college teachers, and I'm not harping on you alone, but we don't seem to be turning out the players that we used to within the college ranks, getting them into the professional system, and here we are messing with the scoring system again, and a concern with my listeners and with the fans out there is what's happening. I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I hate to disagree with you, but I think right now the top 3 ranked Americans are all 4-year college tennis players. Bradley Conn, Stevie Johnson, and John Isner. We haven't had a Grand Slam winner since Andy Roddick in 2000, but I think you're starting to see there was a long movement of kids that just did not go to school, and they were encouraged to turn pro, then I think the tide is going to start to turn, and you're going to start to see more of these guys turn pro. I mean, go to school prior to professional. I think that's going to become more the norm again because it's such a physical sport where you're probably not peaking until later in your 20s as opposed to the John McEnroe era or Pete Sampras era where they were winning Grand Slams at a very early age. The technology has changed, the rackets, the strings, there's more power involved, so you have to be stronger to compete. We're still trying to get the best athletes to play tennis. We don't get the best athletes, they're playing other sports.
Yeah.
But I don't think that college is trying to turn its nose to developing players. I feel like, if you go on the ITA website and you see the top 50, or even the ATP website, the top 50 doubles players, for example, you're probably going to find about 50 to 60% of them played college tennis. And you've got the three best Americans right now that played not just one but 4 years of college tennis. They're ahead of Jack Sock. They're ahead of Ryan Harrison. They're ahead of Donald Young. You know, how is that possible? So I think tennis is these coaches are working really hard. I think you're going to see futures using no-add tennis. You're already seeing the 10-point tiebreaker to determine doubles matches, which was really started by college tennis. So I think college tennis has actually been in the forefront of change in the world of tennis. And perhaps tennis needs a little facelift because, let's face it, you turn on television every week, you're not seeing a lot of tennis. You see a lot of golf, but you don't see a lot of tennis. And what can we do to make tennis, like I said, my question always is, what's in the best interest of our sport? How can we grow the game?
Yeah. You know, that's a fair response, Coach, and I appreciate it. And, you know, as we move forward in it, that's probably what we need to be concerned about, above all else, is you know, how do we grow the game? And you know, as you look at it, I mean, you know, concern that and I was sharing with some other coaches this morning, I mean, we're in a position where we're watching the top athletes in our sport rally the ball 20 to 25 times at about 90 miles an hour. They're recovering 20 seconds into it and going about 4 to 5 hours, and yet it just doesn't seem like we're putting out the athletes that can do this. And I realize that you college coaches are working your tail end off to develop players. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you can't deny that at all. And I know that you're out there working day in and day out to do this. And so as you go through it, my question for you here is when you approach these American players, is there still that dream with inside them to play pro tennis?
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, I mean, there's no doubt. They all have that dream to play professional tennis. I mean, you know, it's the problem is, what's a professional tennis player? Is a professional tennis player a guy that goes and can win a future or win a few ATP points? You know, if you're a professional football player or a baseball player and you're one of the top 200 or 300 players in your profession, you make a lot of money and you're pretty well known by the people that follow your sport. I mean, ask the average guy to name someone that's ranked 40 in the world in tennis. That's a hell of a player. But, you know, unless you're ranked in the top probably 75 to 80, maybe 100, you're not making that much money. You know, you're not taking care of your family and doing all the things that you know, you would do if you just had a normal job at the bank. I mean, you're one of the elite players in the world. So it's people need to understand how hard it is to be considered what I consider a pro. You know, there are a lot of guys out there. We have a guy that plays Davis Cup for Bulgaria that played here, was a great player. He's won several $15,000 tournaments. He beat a guy 170 in the world the other day. Won his Davis Cup match in singles and doubles. But nobody's ever heard of him, Dimitar Kucherovski. I mean, if he was a professional football player, he'd be on a roster and he'd be playing third downs and playing special teams and making, you know, $400,000, $500,000, $700,000 a year.
Yeah. It's a great point, Coach. You know, let me ask you this, and I had, you know, and talking to Coach Creasy, and he made a great point here. Maybe college tennis has it backwards. Maybe we should play the dual match season in the fall and the individual season in the spring, kind of like what the UIL Texas Tennis does, where they play team matches in the fall and individual in the spring. Do you have any opinion on that?
Well, I know one thing. Coach Creasy's a lot smarter than I am, so whatever he says, I'm going to listen to. He's always thinking outside the box a little bit, you know, weather-wise. You know, would it be better to play that dual portion of the season? You know, there's actually been a lot of talk and movement to do the individual portion in the fall and get rid of the NCAA individual tournament at the end of the season and just play all individual in the fall and the team in the spring. Mm-hmm. And so that you can just concentrate on one or the other. And if you're playing a dual match and it gets stopped or something, it doesn't impact your ranking or being able to play in the NCAA championships. I think you could try either one. I don't think that's a bad idea at all that Coach Creasy has of playing the because I think he feels like that you could concentrate on your development in that way in the spring, and that you could play more tennis. You could do some different things because he's all about development. And so I can see that argument. Either way, just really focusing on one part of the season during the fall and one part in the spring, I think, would be beneficial for college tennis.
Now, Coach, now I have to ask you, one of my questions as you've traveled through this with the scoring changes and such is, and this is a concern of mine, is, and we've had we've heard John McEnroe spouted on the TV is that maybe we should get rid of doubles at the professional level. With these scoring changes, do you think that we could be seeing the end of doubles at the collegiate level as well?
Well, that's another good question. I think the USTA, you know, and like when they wanted to do these college match days, if you agreed to play it, they wanted to play six singles matches. And if they split the singles, you just play these 10-point tiebreakers for the doubles. So, you know, it's like just a shootout at the end with the doubles. Basically, in my opinion, wiping out the emphasis on doubles. You know, I'm a little old school. I like the doubles. I will migrate to. I mean, if you're teaching tennis or you're playing tennis, by the time you get to be in your 50s and 60s, not that many people are playing singles anymore. They're just playing doubles. You know?
Yes, sir.
So I don't know why. I think people like the doubles, but the problem is the high-end file Roger Federer's or Nadal's or Djokovic's, they don't really spend much time playing doubles. You know, the stars of our sport are not playing doubles like McEnroe did. So it's easy for McEnroe to say that because he was a great doubles player as well as a singles player. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but it would not shock me to see that happen, the doubles be de-emphasized.
Well, you know, I hope that it doesn't happen. I mean, it's an integral part of our sport and development-wise as well. And you and I both know as college coaches, I think that doubles is where we have our most influence as coaches because, you know, we can put a player in a spot to intercept the ball very easily in doubles, where singles tends to be more about the heart and in a match. Does that make sense, Coach?
No, it makes a lot of sense. The positioning and understanding how to play doubles and where to hit the ball and how to move the coach can have a lot of input, a lot of say into that. And So I love doubles. I loved playing doubles. I think it helped develop my game as a player. I've seen a lot of guys improve. Adrian Berkowitz, who came here from Tyler Junior College, he's now in our doubles lineup. His game is evolving. He's more comfortable at net. He's a more complete player. It's just part of our game, and I hate to see it go away. That's why I wasn't a real fan of that college match day format, because it completely de-emphasized the doubles, in my opinion.
Yeah, Coach, now I was down at the Woodlands for a little while. How's Nick Nauman doing?
Nick Nauman has had a very good year. I think he's 17-3 in dual matches. Nick is one of our better athletes. He's a strong kid, fast, plays a little reckless, so we're trying to continue to steady him out a little bit, but he's had a great year so far.
Very good. I'm a true Texan, Coach. I grew up in Burnett, Texas, about 60 miles there northwest of Austin. I'll say if you ever get up there, you got to try Storm's Hamburger, that's for sure.
Okay.
Now, Coach, I had Steve Denton on the show earlier this year, right before the National Indoors. And he made mention to something that I'm very curious about as a Texan. This A&M-UT rivalry.
Yes.
So are you going to see this again?
You know, I think that I hope in the future that we do see it. I you know, it's just I'm not a big fan of this conference realignment where you've taken these traditional schools and they haven't played each other. You know, it just doesn't seem right to me. that Texas and Texas A&M are not in the same conference. But there's some, you know, there's some animosity, there's some bad blood, there's some things that went on, you know, that hurt a lot of feelings and caused some issues. I hope that these, you know, Texas and Texas A&M can play against each other someday soon. But, you know, right now it's just not happening. So, but I don't think that's good for athletics. I don't think that's good for the state of Texas.
Well, Coach, I think the three of us could probably agree that tennis is definitely a gentleman's game. Well, it may take two gentlemen, the coach from the Texas A&M men's team and the coach from the University of Texas Longhorns team, to show the rest of these people within these athletic programs how gentlemen behave, and to reach across those lines, that net, and shake hands and say, you know what, this is good for sports, that the University of Texas and the Texas A&M University play each other on a yearly basis, and it's good for Texas, and it's good for the Longhorn Network, and it's good for the A&M University, just like it is for Michigan and Michigan State, just like it is for Georgia and Georgia Tech, Florida and Florida State. And these rivalries need to continue, for not just for the schools, but for the people of the state.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. I agree with you. I think there's you know, that it's healthy. It makes sense. You know, there's been so much, not only in athletics, but you've seen it at the university and the Board of Regents and the whole thing. There's just, I've never seen it like this before. You know, Governor Perry to Wallace Hall, and, you know, and trying to impeach the president of the university. And there's just been this Aggie Longhorn tension that's gone on the last few years. And then, you know, I think they felt like we had a deal. We were all going to stay in the Big 12, and then all of a sudden, you know, the Aggies packed their bags and said, we're going to the SEC, and the Longhorn Network drove us out, and you guys were trying to do this and do that, and it's just created a lot of ill will. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, you know, as a true Texan in all this, and you've been an observer in this as well, it just would seem like, you know, it was just a spoiled, rotten kid that took their ball and ran with it, Coach, you know, in that situation. And that's my personal opinion about the matter as far as the A&M Board of Regents and the president in that situation. And that's, as I said, my own personal opinion about it. And I don't expect you to comment on it.
Well, I'll give you, you know, I think that they, you know, and I don't want to speak for DeLoss, but I don't think DeLoss Dodds wanted to end his career with the Aggies and the Longhorns not playing against each other.
I agree with that.
I think that was really important to him, and I think he worked really hard to maintain that. And I think he took some criticism for some things that was unfair. And I really think that he did not want that to be part of his legacy, that the Longhorns and the Aggies were not the same conference. And, you know, the SEC, I think, has been good for the Aggies in a lot of ways, but I speak to a lot of those coaches, and what's happened is the travel, and I'm sure Steve Denton would tell you this himself, is incredible what it does to a tennis player.
Yeah.
To get from College Station